Here we are in November, my friends, with an opportunity to salute all of our veterans. Coming up November 11th is Veterans Day. Joe West will be with us talking about his military service and working with veterans. Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch, they're going to talk about the anniversary now, 76 years ago, the liberation of Nazi concentration camps during World War II. So you stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
It's a beautiful day in Tallahassee and around the southeastern portion of the United States, certainly in North Florida. We've been enjoying this now for a number of days and maybe on into a couple of weeks. The forecast's looking pretty nice. We might be needing to use our sprinklers at some point. But anyway, we're going to take advantage of all this. And it's certainly on a Saturday when you got so many good things going on around town. Good time for you to get out there with the family, with friends. Enjoy yourself. You know what I mean? And thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of our broadcast. Glad to bring you news of the day. Plenty of it, by the way. Leon County's been working overtime over there. They're bringing us news of the tire amnesty days. I love this. So what this amounts to is a free tire collection program. You know, otherwise you have to pay like a fee. I think you pay $5 or something, whatever. But this time, at this juncture, they're doing this, and it started November 1. You can drop off old tires at the Leon County Solid Waste Facility or any of the Rural Waste Service centers free. Yeah. And last year they collected nearly 300 tons of tires. Well, interesting factoid, that that 300 tons of tires is equivalent to the weight of two blue whales. I don't know exactly why they chose that. But the point of all this especially is to fight mosquitoes, as we all know, those of us who are mosquitoites. Is that a word? We know that they breed in standing water, right? And tires are notorious for that. So part of that effort to look out for our goodness, our health and well-being and all that, Leon County Solid Waste Facility. And if you don't know where that is, well, you can look it up. It's over there, out there on Highway 27. So that's a cool thing. What else from the county here? County hosts a hired-on-the-spot, now this is very, very important, hired-on-the-spot career event. Okay, it's hosting its hired-on-the-spot career event where local job seekers can apply, interview, and get hired all in the same day. Hey, I might look into that. There's got to be somebody who can do this job better than I'm doing it. So on Monday, November 8th, candidates can learn about the county's job openings with competitive pay, great benefits, career advancement, and a whole lot more. Candidates chosen to join the county team can start as soon as November 15. Wow. So they got different kinds of work here for you. You can work on roads during, you know, maintaining roads as a maintenance technician. Operate heavy equipment and machinery as an equipment operator. Then there's those folks they need over there with our county parks as a park attendant. And then there's facilities support tech 3, which is basically helping to maintain county buildings, janitorial sort of things, I would imagine, and maybe some light engineering stuff. Anyway, it's all called the Hired on the Spot career event. It happens on the 8th from 9 until 11, and then again from 3 to 5 at the B.L. Perry Jr. Library branch. That's on South Adams, 2817 South Adams. So Dr. B.L. Perry Jr. Library branch. That's the location. Hopefully that's of use and assistance to you. County also has an Adopt a Tree program. Okay, so the county's now accepting applications for its Adopt a Tree program, which is open to all residents of Leon County who live outside the city limits. The program is one of the many ways the county supports our local ecosystem and exceeded, even last year, their strategic initiative. And so that amounts to 15,000 trees from 2017 to 2021. That's remarkable. Applications will be accepted through January 31st of 2022. You can find out more if you go to leoncountyfl.gov/adoptatree. Cool. The city's doing something similar. The city has an Adopt-a-Tree program. You know, not to be outdone by the county. Well, that's cool. Black gum, American sycamore, and winged elm. Those are the particulars they're looking for. The trees, depending on the species, are between 5 and 8 feet in height. So this is if you want to plant a tree. The city offering, once again, their free trees to eligible homeowners within the city limits. You got to apply for this, the same like the county. You go to talgov.com, and tree planting will begin in mid-January. So a sort of parallel effort there. Now, on with more important news about clean water. County is sponsoring a Keep Our Waterways Pristine effort Saturday the 13th of November, and this starts at 9 o'clock. On that Saturday morning, basically a week from today, if you're listening on Saturday to our broadcast, Leon County government will host the Williams Landing on the Water Cleanup from 9 a.m. on till whenever as part of the county's strategic initiative to protect our local water quality. Find out more about this if you go to growinggreen.org/cleanup. So there you go. Volunteers of all skill levels are invited to participate in this year's cleanup event. How about that? And, you know, when you talk about natural resources around here, our rivers and lakes are world famous. And so we owe it to ourselves, to the environment, and to the world, you know, keep all that going strong. Let's see. Have I got time for one more? I think I do. This is cool. This is actually happening today. This is Leon County launching a new downtown heritage trail with guided community walk. Okay, so this starts today, 10 a.m. And it's at the Walker Library Bar, 1903 East Park Avenue. This Saturday, Leon County government will launch the new Downtown Heritage Trail, a tour showcasing 13 historically significant sites in downtown Tallahassee. So if you're really trying to get into the whole history of, better understanding of, the history of Tallahassee and such, and Leon County, this Heritage Trail is going to help you. It was developed in partnership with the county and Tallahassee Downtown Improvement Authority and the John G. Riley House Museum. Along with the City of Tallahassee, the Florida Department of State, the Tallahassee Historical Society, and local community leaders. So it's all good, and it's all happening today. The new Downtown Heritage Trail. So check that out. Folks, I'm just plumb out of time here. I've used the opportunity to keep bringing you up to date on all these very important matters. But you stay with me. We've got a great conversation coming up here momentarily with Joe West.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
So from our archives, as promised, I have this conversation back from 2015. Joe West, who at that time was the winner of the Glenn J. Winnick Humanitarian 9/11 Service Award. Joe West, patriot, a military veteran, and in keeping with November 11th coming up, Veterans Day, we thought this would be a great opportunity for us then to give attention to the efforts of those who contribute sizably to the welfare of others, especially in matters of national defense. So let's take a listen.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We're back here, and we have with us Joe West, who has accomplished a number of things in his lifetime, and remarkably is rather humble about the whole thing. It's been difficult to get Joe to talk about his own work. And as we look around this here town of Tallahassee, there are a number of folks just like Joe West who are sort of quietly going about what they do. And it happens that Joe has spent a bulk of his time serving veterans, particularly Vietnam veterans, POWs, MIA kinds of things, the recognition that that whole group of individuals deserves. So let's welcome Joe West to our broadcast. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thank you.
And considering all of this attention being directed at you, again, you seem to remain rather undaunted about that and just, again, kind of going about your business.
It's, you know, it's nice, I guess, to be recognized, but it goes back to 2009 when the parade got canceled, and we stepped up. Several of us stepped up and said, "You know, we need to form an organization that is totally responsible for that parade." We did so. That organization became known as Veteran Events in Tallahassee, or Vet Events Tally is how we go. And because I was the fool that stood up first, I got to be president, and I have not been able to give the job away since.
Watch out for that. Yeah. So when you have a great idea, sometimes.
Yeah, I should have kept my mouth shut.
Be careful what you ask for. Yeah.
But, yeah. And we've been very blessed. We've got a core group of about a dozen volunteers that work with us year round. We've expanded the parade from what it was when we took it over, which was on Adams Street, and got maybe 500 people to participate, and you might have had 1,500 people show up. Yeah. We now average about 3,500 participants in a crowd of between 25 and 30,000.
Yeah, that's a good deal. So, and that, of course, that happens Veterans Day, November the 11th this year, as it does every year. It's always the 11th, which originally was Armistice Day?
Or it was the origins of Veterans Day, or the 11th of November,
right.
was Armistice Day to end the end of World War I, which everyone considered the war to end all wars. We have since proven that inaccurate. But to make it a more ceremonious occasion, they decided they would sign the armistice at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month.
I see.
And that's how the November 11 situation came about. It was renamed Veterans Day, I'm thinking in the early 50s.
I think so, yeah.
I'm not quite that old, but, quite that old now that I think about it. But it was renamed Veterans Day. It is not a weekend holiday. It was a holiday that is always on November 11th because of the connotation of 11-11-11.
To its origins, yeah.
The only time that's different is when the 11th falls on Sunday, and then it's celebrated on the 12th on Monday.
I got you. So, in fact, this Vet Events Tallahassee organization that you were largely responsible for in its founding, you've gone on to invest yourselves as an organization in a lot of other activities and events. Tell us about that.
We've been very fortunate to have the resources made available and have the talent available that we've been able to help the county with its Operation Thank You for the last 4 years. We've gotten heavily involved with the Vietnam Vets Legacy Vets Motorcycle Club in their annual event, which is coming up next weekend, actually, the POW MIA Recognition Day.
Right.
We have a candlelight vigil this coming Friday night at the Korean Memorial. It starts at about 8 o'clock. Mm. And then we also have a motorcade on Saturday morning that forms at Governor Square Mall and goes down Appalachian Parkway to the old Capitol, and then we have a brief ceremony at the Capitol that lasts about 35 minutes or so with a speaker and some things, just bringing recognition to the more than 80,000 soldiers, sailors, and airmen that we've left unaccounted for since the end of World War II. That's about half the population of Tallahassee.
Wow. Yeah, that definitely puts things in perspective in terms of the significance of human cost, the toll of that. Okay, let's make sure we've got our dates square here. So that POW MIA recognition, that is national, and that's this coming Wednesday.
No, Friday the 18th.
On Friday the 18th.
It's on Friday the 18th.
Okay.
Is the candlelight vigil down at the Korean Memorial in Cascades Park.
Okay.
And then Saturday morning is the rally at the Capitol on the 19th.
Okay.
That you can be part of the motorcade if you'd like, or you can just go down to the Capitol and wait for everybody to get there.
So it's always the
Third Friday in September is the national POWMIA recognition day.
Okay, cool. So as an organization, then, it sounds like your thrust is to keep us all mindful of the contributions, the sacrifices, the loss in some respects, then the loss of life, the loss of opportunity, even the disabilities that veterans have endured on behalf of the nation, right?
We take it upon ourselves. Our mission is to honor veterans in every way that we can. We actively support other organizations that do that, the Patriot Guard riders here locally that provide the flag lines and escorts for veterans' funerals.
Yes.
Vietnam Veterans of America, who does the July 4th reading of the Declaration of Independence on the Capitol steps, one of their events. We find ourselves working hand in hand with a lot of the veterans organizations.
Well, and I know we've had conversations with the folks at Wounded Warriors and Quiet Waters.
Warriors
and Quiet Waters, and they have worked pretty hard too. They have a little different approach to their work. But it's laudable, isn't it?
It's remarkable. Really, really cool what they do. And again, this is another organization like Vet Events Tally that's total volunteers.
Right here, yeah.
It's right here in the area. They bring in about a half a dozen wounded veterans that are in the process of rehabilitation. They bring them in for 5 or 6 days. They keep them in condos down at Panacea. And take them out fishing every day and take them to Wakulla Springs and just basically introduce them to the North Florida area because we live in a pretty cool area.
We
have a lot of really, really great things around us. And the Warriors on Quiet Waters folks are just wonderful with what they do.
That's really cool.
Patriot Guard usually will meet them at the Florida-Georgia border and escort them out to Panacea. We get law enforcement to escort us through Gadsden, Leon, and Wakulla County. It's a fun event. And the guys are they're just overwhelmed at the crowds and stuff. People in Wakulla County are lined up along the highway all the way from the county line down to Panacea.
Wow.
So it's fun.
We're learning all about Vet Events Tally and their work here in the community. We have Joe West, who is the founder and apparently still the president of this fine organization.
Can't give the job away. I've been trying to give the job away.
Well, we'll see if we can work on that, too. You stay with us. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we've got Joe West with us. He is the founder, president, chief cook, and bottle washer for an organization that has come to the attention of a lot of folks around.
It was a decision made by the then Leon County Veterans Service Office, and he made the decision in tandem the day prior to November 11th. We had a tropical storm off the coast of Panama City that they were forecasting in the morning that was going to come right across us.
Right.
At that time, half the parade was made up of high school bands.
I see.
And
So the intentions were good.
The intentions were, basically, we don't want these kids out in bad weather, blah, blah, blah.
What are you going to do?
And since school was getting out at noon, it was a half day, he had to make the call early. The veterans organizations pretty much went ballistic about it. And then, of course, the storm died out by Wednesday or the day before. The 10th, the afternoon, it was down. On November 11th, we had a little bit of a breeze and some mist downtown, and that was when everybody basically called for him to be, tarred, feathered, and rode out of town on a rail. I was the one that said, it's our fault. We turn the parade over to the county. If they're making decisions we don't like, then maybe we need to be making the decisions and keep them out of it.
I see.
And that was the beginning of veteran events in Tallahassee. Some real interesting things happened. A couple of attorneys, Matt Willard and Lisa Hurley, came forward. We were to present our proposal to the county commission on February 9th. We had discussed this in December.
Matt's been on the show.
Talked
about that.
And we discussed it in December. And so February 9th, we were scheduled to appear in front of the county commission with our proposal of how we were going to do this parade. And on January 15th, I flunked a heart stress test. And on January 20th, I had a quadruple bypass. And at that point, I thought Vet Events Tally, didn't even have a name then, but Vet Events Tally, I thought, was dead in the water.
You were lucky to be alive at that moment.
And Matt contacted me while I was in the hospital, said, "We want to help you. We've heard about this. We want to help you." They went ahead and put the presentation together. Lisa presented the presentation to the county commission. And by the time she got done, they just wanted to give us money and let us do what we could.
Wow.
She did an outstanding job. And if it wasn't for Matt and Lisa, we'd have died before we began. They came up, they stepped up and basically took the reins that first 3 or 4 months while I was recovering. And the rest is kind of like history. We've had good parades.
We've talked about this too, that the events that you have helped to sponsor – and participate in the parade, being one of those, is saddled up alongside of those things that you're doing directly for veterans. And there's a lot of those activities, too. I'm noticing even from your website, I can go here and support a vet if I want to do that.
Yes.
I can make a monthly pledge. I can do a one-time gift. And how do you manage all that?
Well, the website is done by Melissa Ralston of Plato Win, and she has done an excellent job with our website. The pledging part, we came up with the idea last year. We always are searching for money, just like every other nonprofit in the area. We depend on people's donations. We're not a government-funded agency. And we came up with the idea of 500 for five. And what 500 for five was that if we could get 500 people to commit to donate $5 a month, that would pay for our entire parade every year. It costs between $25,000 and $28,000 a year to do the parade.
Right.
And if we could get that 500 to just commit to $5 a month, everything would be paid for, and we wouldn't have to worry about going out and running out and trying to raise money and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not worked out yet. We're still working at it. We're still trying to make that happen. As it stands now, we meet in January, and we have all these great ideas about what we want to do this year. And then about the 1st of September, we get together and we start just Xing them off, saying, okay, we don't have the money for that. We don't have the money for that. We don't have the money for that. And that's how we've always done things. So with the 500 for 5 program, it would be where we could actually have a budget and plan and say, okay, this is what we're going to be able to do in 2016 and in 2017 and in 2018. So that's
tough
been
choices.
The goal of that. Well, you have to make choices.
I noticed one of the programs here, this Patriotism Education Program. Tell us about that.
Patriotism Education Program was the brainchild of the president of Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 96, Mike Donahoe, who is also the person, another one of the people you've spoken about that just does a lot for veterans and nobody knows his name and stuff, and that's a wonderful, he's a wonderful man. But Mike came up with we were at a Patriot Guard ceremony dedicating a statue, and when they did the pledge of or the national anthem, nobody stood up, and it was a elementary school, and so he decided, you know, the problem is that it's not the kids' fault, they just have not been taught protocols like we were. We were raised in a time when 20% of the population served in the military, and our parents, you know, or our uncles or our cousins taught us, you know, this is when you stand up and put your hand over your heart and stuff like that. So 2 years ago, we started working on it. We created a curriculum that fits core standards. We had several educators on the committee that was responsible for doing it, and we created a 5-period curriculum for 3rd, 5th, and 8th graders. And that curriculum has 4 classes Monday through Thursday that do some writing, do some music, do some art, that things that core curriculum needs to have covered. Right. And then on Friday, we bring in a veteran to talk to the class live and let them ask him questions or her questions about their service and stuff. And one of the phrases we coined was the civilian salute, where you place your right hand over your heart. Nobody had a name for that. It's just place your right hand over your heart. And it's that's the way for civilians to salute and show their respect for our flag.
Yeah.
And part of the curriculum is teaching the kids when the proper time to stand and when to place your hand over your heart, how to stand erect, don't be slouched over.
Well, that's a good question. Now, is it protocol to use that civilian salute when singing the national anthem?
Yes.
That's supposed to happen.
Okay. Yes.
As well as saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance is another one, yeah. So that was where the Patriotism Education Program started.
Interesting.
We had tried to get it into all the Leon County schools last year, and we weren't not able to. We're hoping that maybe next year we can tie it in. They have a program in September called Constitution Week.
I see.
And we're hoping to get it tied into their Constitution Week, where some of the schools will have us come in. So far, we've done it for some of the private schools and the charter schools in some of the outlying counties.
Cool.
But we haven't been able to do it all in Leon County yet. And that's just another one of the things we're working on trying to make happen.
My dad was a veteran of World War II. And, growing up in the 50s and 60s in Seattle, Seattle loves parades. I mean, I think there's a parade every weekend. So we went to a lot of parades as a kid. But every time an American flag was presented in the parade, as it passed us by, you stand and you put your hand over your heart.
Yes.
So that and that became just ingrained in my thinking. I cannot be in a at a parade site and not do that. And it just seems so irreverent, disrespectful to not do that.
I'll tell you something that happened.
There's a disconnect there, isn't there?
There is,
generationally,
but,
yeah.
Last year when they were doing the soccer thing, and I was at a local establishment here having a little bit to eat, and I don't drink anymore, but they serve cocktails and stuff. Yeah. But the American team was playing, and they played the national anthem on TV, and I looked across the bar, and one person
stood
up and put his hand over his heart, and he was wearing a jersey for the Brazilian team. And so I waited till the end of the national anthem, and I walked over to him, and I said, "Thank you." And with a very thick Portuguese accent, he said, "You're welcome. I don't understand why other people didn't do that." And I said, "I think that's an excellent question, and I wish I had an answer for you."
Vet Events Tally is what we're talking about. We've got Joe West, the founder and president. You stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, folks. I'm Jerry Thigpen, blues guitar player here in Tallahassee, coming at you for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on 93.
So here we are, my friends, this Saturday following the observance of 9/11, and it's been our purpose today to gather us all about that as our theme and reflect a little bit further. We can't do so too much, in my opinion. The contributions, the sacrifices, the commitments that our veterans, our first responders have made and make in an ongoing way every day. And here we have Joe West, who as a veteran continues to serve our nation, our community, and other veterans. Joe, you were in the service during the Vietnam era.
I'm a in-country combat Vietnam vet, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how that experience changed your life, I'm certain, is we don't have enough time, I'm sure, to talk about all that, but it certainly has changed you, and you are, in fact, a disabled veteran.
Yes, sir.
Because of your participation in Vietnam, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, as the VA puts it now, I am 100% disabled because of ischemic heart disease and colorectal cancer that are the result of herbicide exposure in Southeast Asia.
What was then referred to as
Agent Orange. Agent Orange exposure. Yeah. And the heart surgery that I had with the quadruple bypass was the beginning of my heart problems. I had colorectal cancer when I was 33 years old. Mm. That has been in remission and not come back, so I'm in good shape on that. Mm-hmm. I was in the entertainment business, and I was a stand-up comedian, and I toured for 27 years, and after the heart surgery, I did not have the stamina. My show was very fast-paced, very high energy. I would go on stage to Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle with a grenade launcher launching Nerf balls out into the crowd about 90 feet, and it just went like that at that pace for about an hour and 20 minutes.
Wow.
And after the surgery, I tried working and working and working, and I did probably a dozen shows over the next year, and finally, December 2011, I did my last show at the, and I told everybody, I said, "This is it. This is
it."
And I had a couple of my proteges that I had started in the business here locally, and they worked with me, It was a fun night. Had a great time.
And that was it.
Rock, got a standing ovation, and I left the stage, and I ain't gone back.
Wow. And that, for you then, seems to me, has given you a lot of those kinds of skills, because in talking about this organization that you love so much, I mean, you said earlier, you know, I would happily hand the reins over to somebody, but it has to be somebody in your mind that can really do the job. That tells me this is not just an avocation for you. This is a life's work that you care very much about.
I'm very passionate about our veterans, and I'm very passionate about the organization we founded. We've come a long ways. We've been able to do that because of the volunteers we have, and also because of the time that I've been able to dedicate to getting things organized, getting done, making the associations we've needed to make to get all these things. Right. The upside of that is that I've met people in all walks of life that have all sorts of things to do with different services and benefits available, from bankers to lawyers to everything. And I've established a pretty good contact list in my phone, and I get calls two or three times a week from somebody saying, I'm a veteran and I'm looking for such and such. And I have the ability to say, okay, you need to call Ben Bradwell at Leon County Veteran Services, or you need to call over at the clinic. It's just been a blessing to have all this information given to me and being able to hand that to other folks.
We talked earlier about the generational, we'll call it, disconnect, and I don't even know if that's fair, because I think all of us are susceptible to a sort of glazing. We tend to not appreciate the kinds of things that veterans have walked through and done. And you see some of that come up when you, if you take the time to listen and you watch some of the video or some of the documentaries that talk about men and women who walked through that sort of terror and are still taken by it. I mean, emotionally, they may be in their 70s and 80s, but man, it's right there. What is it that we do not understand about veterans?
Well, you know, trying to explain what it is to be a veteran is just almost impossible. I saw a thing a buddy of mine posted that was written by someone about warriors, and it really described it well. But to try and convey, first of all, when you go to war, it changes you. You see things people were never intended to see. You see how cruel people can be to other people. You have to adopt some of those traits to live, to make it through.
Survive.
And so the difference is that when you come back, you lock up your monster traits and keep them buried, and other people have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
It's like trying to tell somebody what a strawberry tastes like if they've never tasted a strawberry. You don't have a point of reference to begin with, and there's no way to get that across to somebody.
What breaks your heart?
What breaks my heart?
About our disconnectedness, or what is it that we don't...
The lack of respect and the lack of caring for those that our country chooses to send into harm's way. We think nothing of spending billions and billions of dollars to go invade a foreign country, and I'll use Iraq as a prime example, a country that was absolutely no threat to us, regardless of what some intelligence might have said. They were not threatening us, but we invaded them. We set a precedent there that we will never get over, and we sent, I don't know how many, a couple million people over there to do that fighting, and they were there for 10 years. Huh. Now we've brought them back, and we don't want to acknowledge. Our government doesn't want to take care of the people it sent over there and put in harm's
way.
And the
atrocities.
You have 22 suicides a day.
We've witnessed with the Veterans Administration this last couple of years has just been...
And they continue, because they put political people in charge. They continue. When you talk about field grade officers, and I know I'll catch some flack for this one, but when you talk about field grade or general officers or star officers, admirals, whatever, all of those officers got their ranks from Congress. They played politics to get where they were. When you put a politician in charge of something, he's going to tell you what he thinks everybody wants to hear to save his job, and that's what's happened. The VA has gone through some things that's just unbelievable. We got the money to pay Congress $200,000 a year for a part-time job. And make sure that, because if they serve a term or two, they're going to get that for the rest of their lives. They have a health care program that none of the rest of us have access to. Congress continues to give themselves privileges that they make it illegal for the rest of the country to have.
So I will say that in keeping with that ground level contribution, here we have this organization that for its part continues to try to make a difference. Vet Events Tally, and we've had with us today Joe West, the founder and the president of this organization. Joe, thanks for inspiring us all and challenging us to take notice of what we as an as a community can do to support the organization, and how individually we can acknowledge the contributions that veterans have made and continue to make for us every day. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So there you have it, my friend, this conversation from 2015 with Joe West, an inspiring individual and an inspired conversation. You stay with me. Coming up after the top of the hour, I've got Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch talking about World War II liberators.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Remember that you can email me anytime you feel inclined. Topics@TallahasseeTalks.com. That's the place to go for that. Send me your thoughts about the show, a suggested guest or topic. Always good to hear from you, my friend. Find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, all those kinds of places. Lots of good photos and always information about upcoming shows and special guests that we've acknowledged or wanted to recognize particularly. So lots of ways to do that. You can find our website at TallahasseeTalks.com. And, of course, there you have the archive from which we are drawing a number of broadcasts from our history now that we're celebrating 10 years. Carl, you don't even look 5 years older. I mean, Carl is aging well, I'll say that. Yeah, he is. He's just such a handsome devil anyway, but that's beside the point. And I mean, we're focused here on 10 years of Tallahassee Talks and all those remarkable folks we've had conversations with over the years, and Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch among them. In this hour of the show, we want to focus on this continued recognition of the contributions of veterans to our welfare and to the world. And just for the sake of historical reference, recall that Veterans Day was originally known as Armistice Day. It's a federal holiday. Yes, we know that. And of course, it honors military veterans, and particularly originally was formed at the 11th hour of the 11th day on the 11th month of 1918. And that is the moment when the armistice with Germany, and this is World War I, obviously, went into effect. And at the urging of major U.S. veteran organizations, Armistice Day was then later renamed as Veterans Day in 1954. So it is this month here, not too many days away, the 11th of November, we'll be honoring our veterans in a number of ways, in fine fashion with parades and other salutes of various kinds, acknowledgments and recognitions. But we thought we'd take the moment here to bring back to you a conversation with Michael Hirsch, who is an historian in his own right, focused on the history of Nazi Germany and the horrors that occurred because of all that went on in these concentration camps for a long time. And tragically and bewilderingly, shockingly, the world was slow to wake up to what was really going on. And it wasn't as though they weren't being treated with duplicitous intent. I mean, there was a lot of effort to try to make everything look like it was okay, when in fact the truth of the matter was, later discovered, it was anything but that. It was a horrifying display of inhumanity to man, the degradation of people, and the attempt to obliterate an entire race of people. So Barbara Goldstein is head of HERC, which is the Holocaust Education Resource Council. She's going to talk with us at length. And Michael Hirsch, again, is an historian, bringing to us this firsthand account, effectively, or a narrative that describes what these soldiers found as they went in liberation of these camps. This year, 2021, being the 76th anniversary of that liberation efforts. So you're definitely going to want to stay with me for this conversation now coming up in the rest of the hour. Before we break to that, I want to bring a couple of important items to your attention. Tallahassee, Leon County, and it seems appropriate since we're talking about the needs and the freedoms of people. County City is doing its part to celebrate Florida's first Family Day. The first Family Day in Florida. So this is statewide. Leon County government, City of Tallahassee, they've joined together with people like COCA, the Council on Culture and Arts, to acknowledge and celebrate Family Day as a holiday and community event. Now, this happens on the Friday of Thanksgiving weekend, what commercial retailers would have dubbed Black Friday, right? So the Friday after Thanksgiving Day, they're going to hold this special event from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Railroad Square and at other participating locations around the community. And they have a list here of some of those folks that have already said that they will stay open on that Friday just for families to come and have some fun. All right? So, yeah. So you can find out more about that if you go to their website, floridafamilyday.com, and then /signup. Family resource organizations that are interested in tabling during Family Day at Railroad Square can sign up. Family Day at Railroad Square was organized by Leon County Government, City of Tallahassee. They got a number of locations around Tallahassee and beyond, and you can find that listing there at that website. So what a neat thing to do, you know, when we've spent the entire day eating turkey and watching football games, I suppose. And maybe you got outside and played around in the yard with the kids, but hey, let's all stay together. You got people come in from out of town. We don't hang out at Railroad Square. Go check out some of these other businesses that are family friendly. And we'll enjoy doing that. One other thing, too, kind of a nifty feather in our cap. Leon County has been selected to host next year's National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Cross Country Championships for 2022 and for 2025. So, way to go, County. Today, it was announced, and this was sent to us this last Thursday. Leon County announced that it's been selected to host the 2022 and 2025 National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Men's and Women's Cross Country Championships at the award-winning Appalachian Regional Park. This is the first time that NAIA championship will be held in county. That's very cool. It's cool for a number of reasons. The helps to further our place in the world, especially among collegiate athletics. It brings to the community a fair amount of economic boost because, you know, the people coming in from out of town to celebrate all of this and be a part of this. Not just the participants, the competitors, but all their families and friends and, yeah, supporting personnels, peoples. Well, they're going to come and need to buy gas and food and find a place to stay and all that kind of stuff. Maybe even do some shopping. At any rate, this is a quote from the Leon County Commissioner Rick Miner, who's the chairman of this thing. He says, as part of the county's ongoing commitment to grow our local sports tourism and host national events, we're proud to now welcome NAIA fans, coaches, student athletes to the Appalachian Regional Park. And this, again, is for 2022 and again in 2025. Really puts Tallahassee Leon County on the map as a premier destination for such sports tourism and programming. So said the aforementioned Rick Miner, Leon County Commissioner. So that's what I've got for you at the moment, folks. I've got Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch coming up. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talk.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
The best place for conversation, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We are approaching the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Nazi concentration camps, death camps, at the close of World War II. In April of 1945, American Allied troops, along with Russian troops, found themselves confronted with the horrors of the Nazi regime and all that had been going on beyond the awareness of a lot of folks. And it happens that on this occasion we have the opportunity to bring to you the local director for our beloved HERC, the Holocaust Education Resource Council in Tallahassee, Barbara Goldstein, the director. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you. And it happens, too, that this week was marked with a number of very important events in recognizing this anniversary of the liberation. HERC, for its part, held their annual benefit dinner Thursday night and featured as their guest speaker a man who is well-known, well-published, a filmmaker, author, Mr. Michael Hirsch, and he is with us as well this morning. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Brian. Thanks
Glad
for
to
having
have you
me
with
here.
Us. And as you might imagine, for me personally, and Barbara, you know this, I approach this whole subject with a great deal of, I don't know what else to call it, reverence, I guess, and personal concern, and with that kind of concern that comes when you recognize not only the significance of these past events, and as horrific as they are, but our current status in the world. And so for me, this is not just a sort of
memorializing or a recollection of these things. It is very much about what's going on now, and that's where HERC plays an important role, doesn't it?
Yes, in the local community, we just 2 weeks ago had a big teacher training workshop where we provided teachers with many materials to go back to the classroom and still teach this today because it's so important with what's going on in the world.
For those who are unfamiliar, how would you express or summarize the mission that you bring as this Holocaust education?
The lessons of the Holocaust need to teach the against prejudice and promote humanity and tolerance. And it's education is mandated, and they have to teach it in the schools. So we help assist with that in all ways.
And that reminds me, we're at the 20th anniversary then of that.
Right. In 1994, the legislature passed to mandate all schools to teach the Holocaust in their
classrooms. As part of their curriculum.
Right. As part of their curriculum.
And see, there for me is the broader value, I suppose, or the significance of what you're doing, in as much as this isn't relegated to the concerns of anti-Semitism alone. It's, as you pointed out, it's the whole, I would call it process, even.
It's world history. It's not anti-Semitic. It's world history is what it comes down to, and European history. And some schools just pass over this very, very fast, and there's so much to cover in European history.
So with that mission at hand and your annual fundraiser then happening this last Thursday, you guys decide to bring Michael Hirsch to us, who for his part has done, I think, a remarkable job in bringing to us a firsthand account in this book entitled The Liberators. Right, Mike, tell us about The Liberators. I know that there's a lot you can say, but what's a good starting point if we're talking about this book, do you think?
I tracked down, and that was a lot of detective work, more than 150 of the GIs, including a handful of female nurses, who were involved in the liberation of various camps in as the American forces moved across Germany toward Austria in that period from April 4th, 1945 to May 8th. So I tracked them down, interviewed them, went to a number of reunions of World War II vets to interview people, found most of the people on the phone, and also discovered when I began working on this project that something like this had never been done, which I found almost preposterous. I mean, how in, you know, the 2000s do you discover a new angle on the Holocaust? There have been 100,000 books or more written about various aspects of the Holocaust, including memoirs. An occasional liberator has written a memoir, but until I did this, nobody took a look at the liberation as a rolling event that was coinciding with our basic mission toward the end of the war, which was to chase and kill Germans. So this was a 2+ year project.
And from my read, you approached that whole enterprise from a journalistic point of view. You are the person who is walking us through all of those experiences among those who were liberators themselves, among those who were captives.
Right. My background for my entire life from sixth grade on has been as a journalist and then as a writer. I spent most of my career in
sixth grade.
Sixth grade. Yes.
How did that happen?
I started the Bateman Booster at this grammar school I went to in Chicago and conducted my first interview in sixth grade with a magician who visited the school. And I still see the headline, Mr. Irving Makes Magic. And I began asking questions then and never stopped.
You're so annoying.
So how you ask? How are you feeling this morning?
Feeling great now.
But the neat thing, neat is the wrong word. The important thing for me is that I did approach this journalistically, which is basically to say, just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
That can be real annoying. You know, people wonder, well, why aren't you believing me? Everybody else believed
me. Given the state of our current political scene.
Right. But
everything we hear is a lie.
But,
God.
I mean, just because somebody said, oh, I was at the camps, it wasn't, oh, yeah, well, tell me everything.
Not necessarily so.
It's the difference between what people describe as oral history, you know, which is I'll set up a microphone or set up a camera in front of you, and I may have a list of questions, ask the questions, or you tell me your story. At the end of it, we turn everything off, we say thank you very much, and we archive that and call it the truth. Not so. Or as the song went, it ain't necessarily so.
It ain't necessarily so. And there have been a number of accounts, I think, Barbara, you've pointed to this, where people claimed something to be true, and then you found out later, no.
How do we?
It's a fake.
Yeah, we have to go back and do and check our facts. Even today, survivors will say their story, but how do we know if it's true or not? We have to really check the facts, and that's the problem. That every survivor and even every liberator has a different story.
Talking with Barbara Goldstein, she is the director of the Holocaust Education Resource Council here in Tallahassee. And Michael Hirsch, author of The Liberators, and you're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Barbara Goldstein, Michael Hirsch, talking about this remarkable book, The Liberators, that Michael Hirsch has authored. And in this week of remembrance, when Thursday night, the local Holocaust Education Resource Council, also known as HERC, held their annual benefit. And Michael, you were the guest speaker for that evening. Let's get a little further into the book itself. And you've given us some of your personal background and some of the, I guess we'd say, the impetus for you. I remember watching a video where you're talking about this idea, and you were quite candid about the fact that this is your job and this is what you do for a living. And like any reasonable business person, entrepreneur, you got to think about, how do I make a living? How do I sell what I do? So if we're looking for an idea that sells, your agent might ask, what is that? And this idea had been kind of filed away with you.
Right. I had just finished working on a book called None Braver, where I was embedded with Air Force pararescue men in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
I see.
And I was in a conversation with the editor of that book at a publishing house in New York, and I said, I'm looking for something else to write. And he said, well, World War II stories are still selling. And I said, I'll call you back. And literally less than 3 minutes later, I called him back and I said, I want to track down the guys who liberated the camps and talk about not only what they saw and did then, but how it's affected their lives 60-some years later. And the reason that was in my head is because 3 weeks before that, I'd been watching a PBS show called The Jewish Americans. And there was an interview with a lawyer in New York named Alan Moskin, who talked about being at a camp called Gunskirchen. And it was like 30 seconds. And as somebody who's produced documentaries all his life and is always looking for, you know, what's next, there's that little place in your brain where you file away stories to either be resurrected or where they go to die. And that was just in my head. And I came out with it, and he said, that's a great idea. And I talked to my agent, and then they both said, you got to find out whether somebody's done this. And I went looking, and as I mentioned earlier, much to my surprise, it's never been done.
And certainly not done with the kind of clarity, if I may say. To me, the fact that we're able to see it through the eyes of those men and women who are involved in the liberation of these camps, and a guy like Morton Brooks, who is part of the story, who himself, as an American soldier, is taken captive, I guess, following the Battle of the Bulge. Is that how that worked out? And somewhere in that time frame, he finds himself a prisoner, and telling us of his experiences as a prisoner.
Right. They were a number of GIs were captured, taken to one of the Stalags, and then an order came down saying they needed 350 prisoners to be sent to Berga, which was a slave labor camp digging tunnels into mountains, and they wanted all the Jewish prisoners to go. And actually, there weren't 350 Jewish prisoners, but they managed to find all the ones who were there, and several of them essentially changed their identity. Their dog tags didn't say they were Jewish, but others basically said, I'm not going to hide this. Well, they were sent to Berga. Brooks, whose name at the time was Brimberg, Morton Brimberg, and managed barely to survive. I mean, as they got to the camp, they passed what they later learned were Polish slave laborers in, you know, the final stages of death. This is, you're not getting enough food, you're working, you know, 18 hours a day, you've got to deal with disease and everything else. And they were really looking at their future as they walked past them.
One of the remarkable assertions there is the idea that when you are part of a system that is crazy or constricted in some manner, you will conform to that system. And that is a truth that has informed, I would say, much of psychotherapy in the last 60 years, where, you know, you look at Virginia Satir, and she says, you know, when you live inside of a family that is structured in a crazy way, you'll act crazy. Because a lot of people say, well, why didn't you fight back? Why didn't you try to? Well, yeah, tell us about that. Why was that happening?
The GIs did what they could. The number who were taken prisoner and sent to these camps was relatively small in the context of what we're talking about today. But they did their best to survive. You mentioned Morton Brooks, and there's a couple stories that I'd like to tell you about him. When the end came and they were marched out of the camp, because the Allies were closing in, and it was the order of Hitler or his command that our prisoners should not fall into Allied hands, which means, you know, march them to death or get them away. So they marched them out, and they're marching through this little town of Berga, and the German civilians were spitting on them and screaming at them and yelling at them. I mean, you'd think they would have said at that time, the war's over, the American army is, you know, like 10 minutes away, but that's how they treated them. And then Brooks comes back to America, and he's trying to get into, I forget if it was college or graduate school, it's in the book, and he's not getting responses to his applications. And a friend looked at it and said, change your name from Brimberg to Brooks. And as soon as he did that, he began getting responses, ultimately became a clinical psychologist with a PhD degree.
Remarkable. And Barbara, this is exactly, it seems to me, the point that Herc brings to us in saying, folks, you cannot look at the end result and wonder, how did this all happen? You have to look at where you are right now in this culture and in this time when any kind of prejudicial thinking is somehow tolerated. Mm-hmm. Michael, you talk about German citizens who obviously for a length of time had embraced this kind of thinking, that they would have tolerated that in themselves, then laid the foundation, didn't it? It was the sort of seedbed.
It's, you know, if you ask me, what are the stories that stick with you after researching this for so long?
Yeah.
It's those kind of stories. I'd been interviewing some veterans, and one of them said to me, "Do you know about Gardelegen?" And I said, "No." He said, "Look it up." So I looked up Gardelegen, and Gardelegen was a place where they were moving train loads of slave labor camp inmates away from the onrushing American forces. And there were two trainloads. One, I believe, came from a camp at Flossenbürg. But the Allies had bombed out the tracks. So the train stopped, and they get about 2,000 of these prisoners off the train. And at the time, there were no more, according to the records, than 31 SS guards. And they begin marching them, okay? And they come to this town of Gardelegen, where the local Gauleiter has managed to scare the hell out of the local populace and say, well, we don't want to have happen here what happened at some other village 30 miles from here where the prisoners got loose and raped and plundered. So there was a stucco grain barn, a granary, on the edge of town. And by the time they got to that place, the number 2,000 had dwindled to just over 1,000. The others were shot and left dying by the road. Or dead by the roadside. Well, they herded them into this barn after covering the floor with straw and pouring cans of petrol on it, gasoline. And they closed the doors. Now, I'll back up a little. The local forces didn't have any problem getting the villagers in the town to help do that. And I keep saying, what kind of mother, you know, tells her son, Fritz, you go help set up to murder these people and make sure, you know, you're back home by 5 because I've got your favorite Wiener Schnitzel for dinner. But that's what they did.
Horrific.
You know, they herded them in there. They locked the door and they set the place on fire. 1,016 people were essentially incinerated. And the kids, the German youth, who earlier in the war people thought of them as, you know, more like Boy Scouts. By the end of the war, you know, they were using them to try and shoot and kill. They set up guns around there, so if anybody managed to get out, they were to kill them.
Talking with author Michael Hirsch, Barbara Goldstein here talking about Herc, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here on a Saturday.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are talking with Michael Hirsch, author of The Liberators, and Barbara Goldstein, director of Herc, the wonderful organization in Tallahassee that helps educate and provide resource for educators all about the Holocaust, the Holocaust Education Resource Council.
Before the break, Brian, you used the word denial.
Yeah.
And when I began working on this project, that was weighing heavily on my mind, that, you know, people denying the Holocaust, this book, it'll refute that. And when I would contact a veteran who had been there, inevitably they'd say, well, why are you doing this? And initially I would say, well, you know, the people are denying that it happened, you know, this is a good way. And they brushed it aside. They said, denial is not a reason to do this. The Holocaust is the best documented event in history.
Yeah.
You know, we documented it in film and in memoir and every other way. And the Germans were meticulous in documenting it. So these veterans weren't concerned about denial.
Yeah.
They agreed to tell their story because they felt it needed to be told and people needed to be hear it. And in many cases, they agreed to tell me their story because, frankly, they knew they're nearing the end of their lives. The age range of the people I talked to was 83 to 96. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, they had never talked about it.
Wow.
There were more than half a dozen occasions where I'd ask a man, when did you tell your wife and your family? And they'd say, I never did. Or they'd say, I never told my wife. She's hearing about it now for the first time because she's sitting next to me while you're talking to
me. Wow. And as they're trying to recall this stuff, it's crystal in clear in their minds, right? I mean,
not crystal clear are dates and locations. What is crystal clear are the events that happened.
That happened.
And in some cases, a guy would tell me what unit he was in, approximately what date it was, and I had to figure out what he's talking about by going back to the Army records, the Army chronology of World War II, which is specific almost down to the battalion level, day by day, as to what unit was where. So if a guy can tell you, well, I was with Company A of the 21st, you know, of the 3rd Battalion, 14th Regiment, such and such infantry division, I can pretty much pinpoint where they were.
It's one of the characteristics, I think, of really great authors. Barbara, would you agree that, that it's somebody who spends these countless hours? I mean, when you talk about 150, 180 people that you had to track down, I mean, where did you start? You know, and probably more importantly, when did you know you were done?
Well, my regret was that I didn't start 10 years earlier when there would be many more people. But I started with just a couple of people who sent me to other people. And then actually when I was writing the proposal for the book, because in nonfiction writing you do a book proposal and publishers
take a look
and say, yeah, we want that or we don't.
Yeah.
And I went to the reunion of the 42nd Division, the Rainbow Division, in Mobile, Alabama. Now, an Army division is about 15,000 people. In 2000, I forget if I went in 2007 or 2008, I went to their reunion in Mobile, Alabama. There were 45 guys there.
Wow.
And of the 45, three or four, you know, had been
on the scene.
And in particular for them, it was Dachau.
Yeah.
And that's what you start with. But you also get directed to people, and we're sort of coming back to where we started, who everybody knows they have these great stories, and you interview them and they tell you these great stories and you go, man, that is terrific. And you're just recording it and you're going, this is great. I actually, in the sample chapter in the book proposal was all about this one veteran who had these incredible stories, had been recommended. He had a relationship with the Holocaust Museum in Washington, everything else. He told me that he had been named one of the, what used to be called the Righteous Gentiles, of the world for having saved so many Jews.
Yeah.
And I kept asking him for documentation. He said, well, nobody's asked me for this. He sent me pounds of newspaper clippings, but they were inevitably interviews with him where he made the claim. And in his case, I finally emailed Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial near Jerusalem, and which maintains that list of the righteous. And I said, is his name on the list? And by the way, are there any American soldiers on the list? And they wrote back and said, his name's not on the list, and there are no American soldiers on the list. There are four Americans. So I, you know, that story helped sell the book. It's not in the book. Because it was just, and much as, you know, one of my mentors when I was, you know, just a young kid starting
sixth
out in
grade.
Broadcasting. No, this is early in broadcasting, said, you know, never kill your own story.
Yeah.
You know, because if you have good journalistic instincts and you believe it, well, that was a story I killed. Yeah. You know, it's not in there. I ran into a number of other people like that, and the stories aren't in there. But what that really says is that the stories that are in here, you can take to the bank.
Did that transform you as you went forward? I mean, you started with, hey, I'm going to write a book, and it's got some degree of likelihood of success, you know, and such. And then as you start to get into these interviews, what happened for you?
It becomes pervasive. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about things somebody said, thinking about a lead that you have to track down, thinking about a phone call you made where a woman answered the phone because you've been told that, you know, Joe Blow was there and had this, and you dial the number, you finally found the number, and you say, is this so-and-so? Yes. I said, is Joe there? Well, he died 2 years ago. You know, you think a lot about that. It's inevitable also at some point while you're writing a book to go, why did I ever start this project and believe I could do it?
And you started, when did you start your research? How many years ago?
I think 2007.
Seven. And spent, what, 3 years?
Two and a half years working pretty much full-time.
Yeah. Do you think differently now about the Holocaust than you did when you first started?
I'll tell you what I think differently about. It confirmed the fact that I don't believe in God. About an equal number of the guys I asked, I said, you know, about religion, an equal number said that they lost their belief in God having seen this, and the same number said they became clergymen because of it. But I came out of it convinced that how can there be a God who let this happen? And if somebody tries to play the free will card, I'm not interested in hearing it because God should have been paying closer attention. Hope that didn't alienate half your audience, but it's what it
is. Or one the other half. So we try to play both sides here, you know, on all occasions, on any topic. University of Florida football, Florida State football. I mean, it's all good, bro.
I see.
So, well, folks, this is what we do here. We bring to you the most curious, interesting, cool folks we can find. And it happens that we found Michael Hirsch, courtesy of the very good people at HERC, Barbara Goldstein, our guest, along with Mr. Hirsch this morning. We've certainly not given enough courtesy to this man for the work that he's done. The book is called The Liberators, and I believe it to you, folks, to find it for yourselves. It's available at Amazon.com, among other places. And you should. You should get it and read it. And then send Barbara a check. Help her keep doing the work that she's doing. And everybody wins, right? All right, folks, thanks for being with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
So that's what we have there, my friend. Happy Saturday. And thank you, all of you who have served this country. And all of those who are being recognized this November 11th as veterans of the United States military. Folks, we are pleased to bring you this show weekly and glad you're a part of it. We're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio, streaming online at moosemagnificat.com. All local musicians playing their original songs. That is the sound of Tallahassee at Moose Magnificat Radio. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.